so much conversation to be had, I don't even have time to give you a preview of today's program. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISA Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up, a conversation with WISO reporter Catherine Mobley. But first, Evan Miller and some studio guests on his recent program are going to tell you about a benefit being held for WISO today.
See what madness I can mow. Hen house, watch how fast we about to grow.
Talking rap camp in this hour. Lots of folks around the community have, you know, checked in with us in the loss of federal funding and asking, how can I help? You know, what can I do to chip in, support the cause, if you will? You can always donate at any time. That certainly is helpful. But other folks with businesses, collectives, organizations, et cetera, have jumped in with all sorts of events and fun times and things like that to help support WISO and have a good time while you're at it. This Sunday, out at 800 Huffman in Dayton, a rap camp party for WISO presented by Hen House Forum. And I have the man who is Hen House Forum, Cooley the Curator, back in studio with us.
What's up, man?
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And you've brought along a guest with you, one of the artists that will perform at this event this Sunday.
That's right. I got Sheddy Black with me here to my left. He's a Dayton MC, a legendary Dayton MC. He's been at it for many moons, and he and I met through Rap Camp. We met years ago, but we started collaborating through Rap Camp. Yes. And he's got an album coming out the same day as the party to our Bandcamp page called Vendetta. It's him and Don Johnson.
Well, welcome to WISO. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We have a song from that record that we'll hear once we wrap this up.
That's right, Cooley
passed along to me. Thanks for making available edits for those for us. We were just talking about that at Nick Kazernis' musicians meetup this past Sunday. Making radio edits for your friendly, your radio people.
That's right.
Is good. We like to play
all
the music. We would love to not get fined by the FCC.
Yeah, you don't know. You need no more trouble with the feds. That's for sure.
No, we don't. And we shouldn't have any trouble this Sunday.
Nah, definitely not.
So, Mike, you were one of the folks that reached out to us when we lost our federal funding earlier this summer, asking how you can help with ideas, and you've crafted an event for this Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Y'all have been very supportive since Rap Camp took off.
Well, of course. How could we not?
Yeah, y'all have really been, like, to the point where, like, sometimes, like, I'll get messages from WISO DJs, like, you got a radio edit for me yet? You know what I mean? So it's like,
we're hungry.
So yeah, it only made sense. It was like very much on the forefront of our mind. In fact, I was already thinking about doing it, and then Picket Fence hit me up and was like, hey, we should do something for WISO. And I was like, man, I was already thinking about doing that.
Yeah, he would say that too.
Yeah. So we just, it made total sense. So, the party is at 800 Huffman. It's at a venue that just opened up called the Dead Giant. Since the last time I was here promoting a show at the Dead Giant, we have a sign now. There's a big graffiti mural on the side of the building.
So nice.
A little easier to find. But it's $10 at the door. All proceeds are going to WISO. So all the artists are donating their time. The venue is donating the space. Don and I are going to be DJing. We just want to help y'all out because y'all have been very supportive of our movement.
Well, of course. And thanks for passing it back to us.
Absolutely.
It's in East Dayton, if you don't recognize that address. It's right next to the Davis Linden Building, which I'm very familiar with because I've been in there for 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
Not too far from where, that'd be like Linden and 5th Street intersect, maybe, something like that?
Linden and 5th, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right around there. I've heard cool things about this spot from you and other folks. Nice to have another new venue in the area, so thanks for being a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a DIY venue that my friend Kenny is opening up with the help of Sean O'Shaughnessy, so I'm sure a lot of your listeners out there know who he is, probably worked with him, and then myself, I'm involved as well. And we don't have a – it's going to be like we're basically trying to give people the rap camp experience, because a lot of people want to come to rap camp that don't rap now because we've made it like a thing. So we're going to have – so rap camp is just basically – it's like a family affair, you know what I mean? Even if you never met us, when you come out, it's like you're embraced. So we're going to have a little bit of a barbecue going, you know. It's BYOB, but we'll have some coolers if you want to come out and bring some drinks to share. And yeah, we're just going to throw a rap camp party, except for instead of recording songs, we're going to be performing.
Sure. Yeah, performing.
Yeah. Yeah. How often have you had a collection of the rap camp crew to play for the public, not just recording stuff?
We did. Our friend Allie had a birthday party.
Nice.
Last was it 2024?
Ooh, you guys do private parties. That's good to know.
Yeah, and it was at Blind Bob's, and she just curated like a rap camp bill.
She did.
Yeah, we didn't even plan it like that.
It worked out pretty dope.
So shout out to Allie. She was the first one to put a rap camp show together.
Shout out Silhouette. Boom.
Yeah.
So this will be another round of that. Tell us who's on deck to perform.
So we've got Sheddy Black. He's going to be performing. We've got T-Hunt. We've got Jeremy Street. And we've got Young Reese Dude. And kind of the way that we picked that lineup is on the label, Hen House Forum, those are the four. So Reese just put out an album called Light. It's on Bandcamp, exclusive to Bandcamp right now. It'll be on streaming services here on Friday. We got Sheddy is up next with Vendetta. His will come out on Bandcamp, like I said, on the 31st, same day as the party.
So you can ride
to the party listening to that, just to get yourself in the right mind frame. And then next up will be Jeremy Street's album, Common Ground. And then after that will be T Hunt's album, which I don't think has a title yet. So TBD on that. But that's like those four artists are the next four out from Hen House. So that's how we picked that lineup.
So the record comes out on Sunday.
Yep.
On Bandcamp, so you can check it out on your way in to Dayton. That's 800 Huffman Avenue, just as reminder, by the way.
That's right.
2 to 6, parking nearby, BYOB, all that sort of stuff. There will be some food involved as well. Wouldn't be a rap camp event without food.
Wouldn't.
As
we like to eat. We like to cook, too.
We do, really. Yeah.
I was going to say, we were talking about last time, you said there's folks were bringing in food like the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We learned from the first one that we got to have like a dedicated grill guy.
Yeah, not really.
Because the first one, I was the grill guy.
But you're also, I'm also the rap guy and the beats guy.
Yeah, so my homie, shout out to my homie Snoop. He came out and manned the grill for us. So it's going to be, we're going to try to give people, like I said, like the general public, people who don't rap, kind of give them the rap camp experience at this event. Because Rap Camp has got so much support from YSO, so we just want to kind of bring people into our world while at the same time giving back to some folks that have really gave a lot to us.
Well, you know, you guys care about the same things that we do. Community, you know, coming together, making good music. It's a match made in heaven. Mm-hmm. So thanks so much for your support of us.
Anytime.
Yeah, we're absolutely happy to pass it right back anytime. Well, you can see Rap Camp for yourself in person before you see the documentary in October. You probably get the more cinematic view of Rap Camp, but you want the visceral, up close in person Rap Camp experience. There's a Rap Camp party for WYSO this Sunday, August the 31st, from 2 to 6 at 800 Huffman Avenue in Dayton. All proceeds get sent back to us here at YSO. Thank you again for that. 2 to 6 this Sunday, a rap camp party for WYSO. Thanks y'all so much for coming out, and I'll see you on Sunday.
Right on,
sure,
man.
Thanks for having us.
Good music.
You're listening to YSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny, and as always, thanks for sharing your weekend with YSO. Right now, we are sharing the studios with one of YSO's eminent reporters, Catherine Mobley. Catherine, you cover politics and education for the station.
Yes.
And you've been here a while, so we are a little delayed in getting to speak with you and getting to talk a little bit more about who you are, maybe even outside the studios. And I will say, we just heard a little shaking
a little,
in the background.
Jingle.
Yeah, a jingle. There's we have another guest in studio with us.
Yes, and that guest is Odysseus Darius, more commonly known as Odie. He is my black lab. He's 9 years old, and he has been literally at my hip since he was about 4 or 5 months old.
Oh, he's awfully, awfully cute. And I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, but he recently participated in some damage that was that was done as you were getting ready to take him out for a walk.
Yes. Well, actually, we were. It was on a Friday.
Oh, okay.
I had just finished my shift. I had hosted here at YSO, came home. It was a beautiful summer evening, and we were out walking. We were almost home, and I thought he was about to run across the street. I was trying to grab his leash. It whipped around my finger, my ring finger on my right hand, and it broke it.
Oh.
So it was like crunch. Yes, a big ouch. But I've had surgery. I now have 3 screws. I'm now bionic. I have a bionic finger. And I'm now on the road to recovery, so it's okay.
Yeah, you're doing some therapy.
A lot of therapy, yes. And, you know, he ran off. I was in pain. But then he trotted back and came and sat next to me like, okay, Mommy, now what are we going to do?
Aren't you proud of what I've done?
That's right. That's right.
So let's talk a little bit about your time here at YSO, because really you hit the ground running several years ago, and you're still going at it, especially with the frequency of election seasons that that we all have to go through. Tell us a little bit about your time at YSO, and you're still happy to be with us?
I am thrilled to be with you. You know, it is truly an honor when you can wake up every morning, even if you're tired, even if you've only had 4 hours of sleep, which recently happened to me, and enjoy and look forward to your next project, your next story. So, yes, I very much am enjoying my season here with YSO, and I hope it is a very long and illustrious season. I came to YSO after working in North Carolina for several years. I've worked in television and in radio. I actually started in radio at Central State when I first graduated from my graduate program. But I've worked in TV. I've worked on web. I've done public relations, so I've bounced around a little bit in all forms of media. At the bottom line, I was putting out stories, interacting with people, and creating opportunities for people to share their stories on various platforms.
Yeah. So you've worked in television. Radio's a little different. Certainly the dress code's a little different.
Let me tell you. Yes, although I will share a secret. Before they started with the glass top anchor desks, there were times, especially in the summertime when I worked in smaller stations and the air conditioning was a little iffy, when the anchors had shorts on and flip-flops because it was just so
hot.
But
a nice blouse.
But a nice blouse and jacket, yes. And I'm talking about the men and the women.
Yeah.
On both sides. One of the most interesting TV stories I did. I actually was working here at WKEF. This was a long, long time ago. But it was during a time when the drought had hit Ohio, and it was really bad. And I was out in the middle of a cornfield in the Toledo area and doing a live shot. And my producer said in my ear, "Catherine, you're sweating. Can you just look a little drier?" I said, "It's 102 degrees out here. I'll see what I can do about it." So I worked that in to explain so viewers would understand why I was literally melting on screen. But I enjoy radio. Radio is a great challenge because we don't have the advantage of video to convey whatever we're talking about. We really have got to reach deep into a vast vocabulary to pull up words that not only will describe whatever it is we're talking about or the scene we may be in, but also so our listeners will be able to plug in very quickly. Radio also gives me and other reporters such as yourself an opportunity to use a lot of natural sound and get right there in the moment. And that's something I really enjoy doing.
What are some of your favorite stories that you've covered in the past?
Gosh, that's hard. I did a wonderful story about a year, year and a half ago with a international gospel group. And I enjoyed working on that one because I was able to integrate music into the storytelling. Also, they worked with a high schooler from a local high school who played the kettle drum. So it was wonderful to be able to interview her, bring in some of her comments and her drumming. And that was a neat one. And then also I had the opportunity to work on a piece where a woman who was in her mid-90s, pardon me, she was in her mid-80s. She rented an apartment. Part of the rent included having heat. But when we were having a horribly cold winter about a year and a half ago, she and nine other residents in this building had no heat. And so to be able to share that story, and fortunately, I was able to also speak with the landlord, so I was able to give his side too. And that's I always think about. I'm not trying to nail anyone to the wall. I want to present both sides, or actually as many angles to a story as possible, because it's not always just two sides to a story. As many angles to give as many individuals or concerned entities an opportunity to express their viewpoints. That way we all get a lot smarter together because we learn aspects we just did not know about.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You won an award for investigative piece for that story?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I'm very glad. I'm very proud. But again, the awards do not motivate me at all. Although I was pleased the selection committee saw that piece of work as an opportunity to, number one, elevate it and as an example of sterling journalism and quality journalism, which is what all of us here at WYSO strive.
You recently completed a piece that we're going to hear. It's happening out in the Bellbrook Sugar Creek School District. Tell us a little bit about that.
Earlier this year, the legislators in Columbus passed HB 8, which is also known as the Parents' Bill of Rights. Bottom line, it's just saying that in all public schools, from kindergarten through third grade, you cannot teach any sexual content. And then from grades 4 through 12, it has to be parents have to be notified if this content is involved in any curriculum at all. I talked with some people who have children in the Bellbrook Sugar Creek Schools District because there are a lot of parents who are not thrilled about they're not thrilled about the law, but what they really have question about is how the school district decided to create a policy. Again, this is something that affects all public schools in Ohio, and every public school district has to create a policy that integrates this new law. That's where the kerfuffle has come.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at the report you came back with.
Or listen to, right? Let's take a listen to it.
The law is called the Parents' Bill of Rights, or Ohio House Bill 8. It forbids the teaching of sexual content to students in grades K through 3rd. For students in grades 4 through 12, it requires public schools to notify parents about sexuality content materials and curriculum, to give parents a chance to review them, and to give parents the option of requesting alternative instruction. All Ohio public schools must create a policy incorporating the Parents' Bill of Rights. In the Bellbrook Sugar Creek Schools District, Board of Education members define sexual content as inherently private sexual acts or sexual intercourse in any form. During last week's school board meeting, Vice President Audra Dorn used an example to clarify this.
If something is inherently private, it would be if you did it on a park bench, would an officer arrest you for it? If that is the case, it's a behind-closed-doors thing.
The state law refers to curriculum and instructional materials. This school board, however, says that includes high school and middle school libraries, as well as to all classroom collections.
We didn't specifically say libraries. We did say books.
Board member Ann Pryor.
The Ohio law said instructional material. Of course, we know books are a very important part of instructional materials, but it does trickle down to libraries.
But school volunteer Jeff Rausch calls this needless overreach.
Instructional materials, as House Bill 8 is written, don't go out to library books. So children and teens especially looking to explore the library and expand their knowledge set isn't an instructional setting.
Bellbrook parents now have to fill out a form indicating whether or not their child can access these materials. Administrators say a majority of the parents for the district's roughly 870 high schoolers have responded. Some titles in the high school library requiring parental consent include Surrender Your Sons by Adam Sass, Most Ardently by Gabe Cole Novoa, and Transgender Life by Don Nardo. These and many of the books requiring a parent's permission also have LGBTQ plus and trans characters and ideas.
The relationships that are being built in that library are bigger than just a book that might include somebody's transgender child or transgender character.
Parent Andy Wiseman has two children in high school. She believes Bellbrook's new policy unduly focuses on trans people.
Let's not forget the gender ideology that's included in this policy. Well, if you include gender ideology, are you saying LGBTQ plus people should not be on a park bench?
The Parents' Bill of Rights also requires educators to notify a parent if their child wants to be identified by a gender different from their birth sex. In a recent email, Superintendent Doug Cozad assured parents no books have been removed from the high school library and staff continue reviewing materials. He also says titles containing inherently private sexual acts or sexual intercourse in any form are not being segregated out. Parents can look up any title in the district's online card catalog, FollettDestiny.com. While speaking with board member Annie Pryor, I logged in to look up several titles the district identified as needing parental consent. However, at the time of this story, the system is not flagging these books as having sexual content. Pryor says she experienced the same thing and reminded me the execution of the district's new policy is still a work in progress. Overall, she emphasizes, the board created a policy to respect and support a diverse community.
You know, we have Muslim families, we have devout Christian families, and our goal is to let the parents decide what type of sexuality content they want their own children to receive. We're not banning books. We don't want to take books from other kids. We just want the parents to make the decision for their own children.
According to Bellbrook administrators, materials in the middle school library are also under review, and all books containing sexual content will be moved to the high school library. And high school teachers who choose to have a classroom library must also adhere to the district's new policy. Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
Catherine, great job reporting there, as you do on all of your reports. I see Odie has been very, very patient with us as we've sat here and talked. He's looking out the glass studio doors, and I think you've promised him a walk in the park.
I have promised him a walk in the park. He is truly my road dog. He will jump ever since he was 4 months old. He has been riding in cars, going with me everywhere. So, yes, he's looking at me right now. He knows what I'm talking about him. So, yes, we're going to hit the trail and enjoy this wonderful weather.
Catherine Mobley, WYSO's politics and education reporter, thank you so much. It's great to hear a little bit more about you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Up next on WYSO Weekend is Today from the Ohio Newsroom.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom takes you around the state, connecting you with news and neighbors all over Ohio. I'm Claire Roth. For much of the 20th century, Ohio was a powerhouse of coal production. Today, many of the once thriving coal mines and towns have been abandoned, leaving remnants of a bygone industry. In southeast Ohio, one Goliath relic is being recognized with a new historical marker. The Ohio Newsroom's Kendall Crawford reports.
Eddie Lindemore treasures his memories of mining. At his home in McConnellsville, the nearly 90-year-old sorts through newspaper clippings that are strewn across scraps of maps and manuals. He picks up a black-and-white photo of a man in a hard hat in a room of machinery.
Here's the inside of the machine. That is all this stuff here. That's me standing there.
After World War II, energy demand soared, and in 1969, the Central Ohio Coal Company got a massive machine to meet it. Lindemore was the first supervisor on what would become the world's largest walking dragline excavator. In the photos Lindemore shows me, it looks like a cross between a tank and a crane, and despite bearing no resemblance to the fish, the engineering marvel became known to Southeast Ohio and beyond as Big Muskie.
Raised by hydraulics, it takes one giant step at a time. Big Muskie's top speed is a tenth of a mile per hour.
Archival footage of the behemoth shows clouds of dust forming as the nearly 22-story tall machine changed the landscape of Southeast Ohio in a single scoop. It picked up 325 tons of dirt and coal, about the weight of a Boeing 747, every day.
It's like insane how large it was. It's estimated to have unearthed twice the amount of earth moved in the construction of the Panama Canal.
That's Neil Humphrey, Historical Resource Program Administrator with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. He says Big Muskie's size represents just how big Ohio's contributions were to the country's coal production.
This was like a thing that was like larger than life in like every way. During its like life, it was the biggest moving object on earth.
It worked every day when it wasn't broke down. Now it broke down a lot, but it worked every day, 7 days a week, except Christmas. That's the only time it shut down.
Then the ground shifted. Amendments to the Clean Air Act raised the bar for air quality, making high sulfur coal harder to sell. In 1999, Big Muskie was dismantled and sold for scrap. But at Miners Memorial Park, one part remains. Linda Moore grins as he walks up to a bucket big enough to hold an entire marching band.
There's where the picture come from.
What once hollowed out hillsides now sits still for selfies with tourists, like Martha Bradley Maxwell. She came all the way from Texas to pay her respects to her cousin, Charles Mitchell, who was just 26 when he lost his life working on Big Muskie.
So last year was the first year that I saw it, and I just couldn't believe. I thought, oh my gosh, he was working on that thing.
And now with a historical marker telling Big Muskie's story, historian Humphrey hopes more people will see it like Maxwell does. Not just a big bucket, but a monument to Ohio's coal legacy.
Without somebody caring about something, these things disappear. How even something like this massive machine, this is the only part left of it. What else can disappear from history if this can go away?
It deserves remembering, he says, because Big Muskie shaped the land and the lives of the people who worked on it. For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm Kendall Crawford in McConnellsville.
Support thoughtful journalism of stories like these while connecting with engaged and loyal listeners statewide by becoming a sponsor of Today from the Ohio Newsroom. Contact Dan at ohionewsroom.org to learn more.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you Monday.
This is Bird Note. A hawk is hunting in the kingdom of cars and 18-wheelers.
This is the American dream of freedom on wheels. An automotive age traveling on time-saving superhighways.
In 1956, the Eisenhower administration announced plans for the nation's new interstate highway system. 41,000 miles of superior highways with limited on-off access, multiple lanes for high-speed travel, and often a grassy border on either side and down the middle. These grassy byproducts of highway construction created ribbons of wildlife habitat, soon occupied by small mammals such as voles, favorite prey of the red-tailed hawk and other raptors that are now common along many stretches of interstate, as are deer, coyotes, and other animals. At a conservative guess, if the average grassy verge is a modest 50 feet wide on each side of the freeway, that's 12 acres of grass per mile of highway. Multiplied by the current 47,000 miles of interstate, that's about 881 square miles of green. And that's only the interstates. There are hundreds of thousands of other highway miles that crisscross the country and often offer equally prosperous hunting grounds for a multitude of birds. Accidental gifts from the age of the automobile. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on today's program. I'm Jerry Kenney. You've been listening to Why So Weekend, and as always, thanks for sharing your weekend with Why So. Our theme music provided by Magnolia Bolthead. It's a nice little tune called Another Beautiful Day in Paradise. We've got more stories and conversations for you next weekend. Please join us then.